From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, a showdown with Iran, and that's with a question mark. Here's what's happening. The White House has said that a U.S. counterterrorism operation in January accidentally killed two hostages who were being held by Al-Qaeda. Warren Weinstein, an American, and Giovanni Laporto, an Italian, were killed in the raid in the border region of Afghanistan and Pakistan. President Barack Obama said this is a painful loss. He regrets it, of course. Weinstein was 72 years old. He was an American development worker. He was kidnapped from his home in Pakistan in 2011. He was working on an economic development project. And the Italian was kidnapped also in Pakistan. Nine ships of an Iranian convoy, believed to be full of weapons bound for rebels in Yemen, turned around after being followed by U.S. warships stationed in the area to prevent armed shipments. In a moment, in a few hours, Jerry Corsi will join us to talk about a showdown with Iran. What a bizarre story here. A SkyWest Airlines flight to Connecticut was diverted. It descended steeply and made an emergency landing in New York after three passengers lost consciousness. Now, they have no idea why or what happened. The flight carrying 75 passengers departed from Chicago. It landed at the Buffalo Niagara International Airport eventually. Basically, what had happened was one person passed out, and while there was medical personnel that were aboard that plane, a nurse, she tried to give that person attention. Two other people passed out. And again, they don't have any idea what's going on there in that flight. Study after study shows that Americans are not saving for retirement like they should. And a new survey finds that nearly one-third of people who have had some sort of savings plan have about $1,000 or less for retirement. That's it. Mish Shedlock with us, investment advisor. Mish, $1,000 for retirement? That's it?
Yeah. Can't live on that, George. Actually, if you even look at the next third, whether they've got like $5,000 or $10,000 or something, it's really, really sad. And look at the economic data out there today too. New home sales down 11.4% today. So McDonald's closed 350 stores, 350 more planned. And you can look at that and say, well, okay, McDonald's not doing very well. But look at it this way. You know, McDonald's recently raised minimum wage. So did Walmart.
Yes.
That's a good thing because people are making more. But what's that going to do to the marginal store? Are they going to open? Is Walmart, McDonald's, Chipotle's, all of these places, Target, if minimum wages go up, that's going to be less incentive for all these places to expand stores. So, George, it's economic front. Every news report I look at is weaker and weaker and weaker. And now no one has savings for retirement.
Yet they keep saying things are better, better, and better.
I know. It better for who, George? You know, how many times have we had this discussion, too?
Yeah.
Better for who? It's Bernanke says and Yellen says that these low interest rates are helping the economy. No, well, it's helping the stock market. It's helping the already wealthy. It's helping the people who want to buy assets, and it's certainly inflating the price of assets. But the bottom third of the people, the bottom 40% of the people in the country, have no savings, no assets, George. Not helping them.
All right, Mish, thanks so much. Here's a story, one of the strangest I've ever seen. Listen to this one. A doctoral student who moved from India to Indiana to study computer science was complaining of headaches and fatigue, shocked the medical community and herself when doctors discovered a brain tumor that contained bones, hair, and teeth. Now, on her blog, she wrote that she initially thought that she might be tired, or that her schoolwork was too difficult. When she went on vacation, she wound up sleeping for two straight weeks. Soon after, started suffering from headaches. After 3 months of testing, doctors determined she had a tumor, which by that point had left her mostly bedridden. Though the doctors had located a tumor in her brain's pineal region, they determined that removal was risky and could cause irreversible brain damage. After 6 months of searching, she found a neurologist at the Skull Base Institute in Los Angeles who agreed to perform surgery. Friends held a fundraiser to fly her out to L.A. for the procedure, which occurred on tax day, April 15th. Through an incision in the back of her head, the doctors used an endoscope to enter the area of her brain where the tumor was. Now, instead of finding a tumor, the surgeons found a teratoma, a mass of bone, hair, and teeth. Teratomas are embryonal tumors, the most common brain tumors in infants less than 36 months old. They are typically benign, but are defined as being composed either of tissues that are foreign to the area or tissues that derive from all three of the germ layers. Now, germ layers contribute to the formation of all organs and tissues during embryonic development. These masses can sometimes contain hair, teeth, bone neurons, sometimes even eyes. Well, she referred to the tumor as her evil twin sister, who had been torturing her for the past 26 years. What a story. Let's check up in the skies now with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, top that one.
Yeah, that's a hard one to follow, George. Boy, I'm grateful that that young woman got the right doctors and the surgery was successful.
Yep.
Boy, that must be scary.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, a lot going on. Our trusty webmaster just updated our website with about 120 new reports collected just over the last 6 days. So a lot of activity, but I'd like to go back to a date I reported on last Friday, I guess it was, the 14th of April. There was a major event that occurred over the northern tier of the United States. I think I mentioned a very dramatic sighting in Kamloops, British Columbia. Well, as a result of that report, George, a very nice gentleman from Lake Williams, British Columbia, which is up northwest of Kamloops, gave me a call, and he apparently saw exactly the same thing, a very precise formation of white lights that streaked across the night sky. It went from Lake Williams down to Kamloops. I can only but guess, George, but I would say within seconds or not more than minutes, all the parties reported exactly the same time, 9 p.m. Pacific time. So their watches may have been off a little bit, but the objects must have been traveling very, very rapidly. And it appears that the same things may have been seen over Superior, Wisconsin, within 30 minutes.
Wow.
A cluster of distinctly white lights maneuvering in the night sky, forming up into a very precise formation, and then streaking off out of sight of the witnesses on the ground. Also, same night and a little bit earlier, clusters of these orange or red lights that I've been talking about for God only knows how many months now, probably years by now, over New Hampshire, and very dramatic sighting over Long Beach, New York, which is just about 30 minutes drive east of downtown New York City. Gentleman provided two excellent videos, and we should have those posted to our website sometime tonight. Last two reports, very interesting report from Kelseyville, California, up north of Santa Rosa in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Gentleman reports last night that he saw aircraft, military fighters, pursuing a triangular craft with a blue light on it, something very similar from Buckeye, Arizona, out west of Phoenix. So there's a lot going on. That's about all I'm prepared to really report in detail tonight.
Okay, my friend.
If people want more material, they're invited to go to our website, ufocenter.com. There are about 120 new reports there. A lot of them are very, very good reports.
Thanks, Peter. They keep rolling in. You know, every day, 44 people in the U.S. die from an overdose of prescription painkillers, much more with all kinds of prescription drugs, and many more become addicted. In a moment, pharmacist Ben Fuchs joins us. We're going to be talking about this incredible epidemic of people dying over prescription drugs. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Ben Fuchs, of course, is part of the CriticalHealthNews.com team. He's a registered pharmacist, nutritionist, cosmetic chemist. He's been compounding custom medication and formulas for a number of years, and here he is back on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ben, welcome.
Thank you, George. Good to talk to you.
This story of so many people dying from, one, pain pills in those kinds of prescriptions, then general prescription drugs, it's an epidemic, isn't it?
It's crazy, George, I'm telling you. But you know what? As a pharmacist, I'm surprised that people are surprised. I'm shocked that people are shocked, because when you think about it, a prescription drug is a poison. And I'm not saying that metaphorically or poetically or rhetorically. I'm saying it literally. You have a poison control center in your body. You have a system in your body that's designed to detoxify poisons. We wouldn't have survived the millions of years that we survived if we didn't have a system to detoxify plant poisons especially. You know, we grew up on the African savanna. We were eating whatever was out there. We evolved a system that detoxifies poisons. Well, that system, which, by the way, runs on nutrition, that system is responsible for purifying pharmaceutical drugs. The poison control system handles drugs. So now, if the poison control system is designed to detoxify plant toxins and animal venoms and arsenic and all the other toxins in our environment, is responsible for purifying pain pills and antibiotics and antihypertensives and all the other pharmaceuticals that are in the U.S. pharmacopoeia, why should it surprise us when there's poisonous effects like death, or poisonous effects like heart attacks, or poisonous effects like seizure disorders, or poisonous effects like anything else that happens in a long list of adverse reactions? All you got to do is pick up a package insert from a prescription drug, or go to the PDR, and you'll see, you know, 100 different possible adverse reactions. You know, there's millions of adverse reactions, serious ones, every year. We talk about the deaths, but there's adverse reactions like paralysis and kidney damage and heart damage and horrible things that happen in response to these medications, and yet we have them branded on television as if we were selling Happy Meals, you know?
When you became a pharmacist, did you even think that you would be uncovering these kinds of stories or even questioning the big pharma?
I was shocked. When I got out of, well, first of all, I was shocked when I got into pharmacy school, because much of what we study is poisons and how poisons work and the nature of pharmaceuticals as poisons. But it didn't really dawn on me till I got out and worked in the drugstores, and I started to see that the same people were getting the same same people were coming in for the medications. It was like a small segment of the population that was getting dosed, that was getting prescribed medication, and they were the weakest among us. They were the old folks and they were the young folks. Folks in the middle pretty much, you know, were somewhat protected, but the older folks and the younger folks, those were the ones who were taking most of the prescription drugs. And you know what? They weren't getting better. Now, here's an important point that we need to make a distinction on, and this is something that gets conflated by people for an ulterior motive. They combine two ideas. One idea is medicines for infection and pain pills also for acute problems. You know what I'm saying? Like quick problems. And then there's the long-term chronic problems. The vast majority of our healthcare crisis, and we have an amazing healthcare crisis. We've got more medicalization than any other culture in the history of mankind, and we're the sickest. But the biggest problem, one of the biggest problems, is that we don't distinguish between long-term chronic disease and medicating for long-term chronic disease, and antibiotics and pain pills as well. Now, in the realm of infectious disease, and heroic medicine, where they stitch you up, and even pain pills. You know, thank God we got pain pills, George. And I always recommend people keep some pain pills in their medicine cabinet.
Yeah, but I mean, I just had that story, Ben, where 44 people die every day in America from pain pills.
They're highly addictive. They're dangerous. That's why you got to keep some in your medicine cabinet for emergencies only. Emergencies only. You know, like, don't break this glass unless there's an emergency.
Well, why can't people just, maybe it's easier for me to say, but toughen it out?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question, actually, because people have different pain responses. You know, women, for example, have a much higher pain tolerance than men. And we know that there's pain tolerance differences among individuals. So I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. Why can't we tough it out? And I have a tendency to tough it out myself. But you know what? Some other folks may have a lower pain threshold, and pain is pain. You know, the human organism is designed to find pain highly, highly objectionable for good reason. Pain tells you something's wrong, which is why you don't want to get addicted. You don't want to start using pain pills just to hide pain. You know, the body's always talking to us, George. We don't speak body. And so we have formed a class of interpreters who will speak body for us. We call them doctors. And that's what doctors are supposed to do. They're supposed to speak body. Now, if we could speak body, we wouldn't need to have intervention. We wouldn't need to have a mediating aspect. And this is really ultimately the most important question to ask when it comes to our health crisis. Why do we feel, when we all own a human organism that's capable of all kinds of miraculous healing processes, that has its own pain medicine, has its own anti-anxiety medicine, has its own rebuilding and growing and healing medicine built into it, why do we feel like we need to have a mediating, intervening force to come in and help us out? Now, there's a study that came out earlier. I know you want to talk about this, but this is very important. The study that came out about how supplements are problematic.
Right, and that came out of your old university.
Right. What are you going to do? Right? So, thanks for rubbing that in there, George.
Yes, appreciate that.
So, when they tested out these supplements, and by the way, it's a crazy way they did this thing, but they came out with this idea that supplements can cause cancer. But how many people die every day? You know, 100,000 people a year. So, how many people die every day from prescription drugs? You know, we got to put all of these things in perspective. Now, the study that they're all talking about that's in the news now, that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean ridiculous. When you start to read how they actually did this thing, ridiculous conclusions that they drew out of it. But leaving that aside, how come we find that dramatic? How come we find that impactful and compelling when thousands of people are dying every day? If you take 100,000, what does that come out to? 300 people a day or some crazy amount of people a day from prescription drugs? Dying, George. And that doesn't include the adverse reactions. And the best they could do is come up with a meta-analysis of four supplements, not all supplements. You know, you read the headlines, it sounds like it's all supplements, right?
Right.
It's four, and three of them are essential. The fourth one's not even, and they don't tell you what form it was in, and it's not chemistry. It's just based on interviews with people. I mean, it's just a horrible, horrible study, but it gets, you know, they put a headline out, probably the press.
Well, and who funds this study?
Well, you know, that's another good question, George. It's the American Association for Cancer Research, I believe it is, AACR or something along those lines, and, you know, I don't know who's funding it. The study isn't out yet. It hasn't been published. It kind of got leaked from out of the press from a presentation that was made. So the study's not available.
See, I always question studies
based on
who funds them.
Yeah, well, you're a journalist, you know. Yeah. We all know in the journalism business.
I mean, if there's a study that says GMO foods are great,
yeah.
I want to know who's funding that study.
Right. You always want to go to the bottom of the study and see who paid for it. Sometimes it's not there. In the press, they don't have to put it. When they write an article about the study, they don't have to put it, who's funding it. But if you go to the study itself, and I'll tell you, George, we all need to become savvy to studies and how to research. And today with the Internet, there's so much research that's available. So when you read an article like this, before you form a conclusion, you know, if you're reading it on the Internet, before you form a conclusion, go to the study. In this case, you can't, but you can do some more research. Many times you can, and you'll be shocked at what you find out. Many times the headline is not reflective of the conclusion.
True. That is so true. Well, Ben, we're going to take a break in a moment, but your website, criticalhealthnews.com, is available for people who have questions or want information on their health. And you've got a toll-free number. What is that?
Yes, 855-949-7234. And I endeavor to make Critical Health News filled with content, very important content.
Well, you know, we have endorsed Critical Health News, and we've been doing it for several months now because I'm getting letters from people who are thanking you. And as people know, you pop up on the show with little vignettes. But you've helped people.
You've actually helped people. I appreciate that. You know, we all have to have a purpose in life, right, George? And to me, if you're not making a difference in the world, a positive difference in the world, you're taking up space. And if you are making a positive difference in the world, it gives you a raison d'etre, you know, a reason to get up in the morning, a reason to to withstand the ups and the downs that are an inevitable part of life. And I believe that if we're sick and if we're not feeling that joy for life, then we're missing that kind of purpose. That's something, we're not helping people get better.
Okay. Ben, we're going to come back and talk more about this study that says vitamin supplements can increase cancer and heart disease. And then next hour, we'll open up the phone lines with pharmacist Ben. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, with pharmacist Ben, of course, Ben Fuchs. We'll take your calls next hour. Ben, let me read this portion of this study, and then we'll react to it again. Dietary supplements, such as over-the-counter multivitamins, do more harm than good and can increase the risk of developing cancer and heart disease, according to research. The study by the University of Colorado, which reviewed several trials involving thousands of patients over a decade, showed that those who took extra vitamins and minerals were more likely to have health problems. Taking more than the recommended dosage of beta-carotene, a supplement advertised to boost the immune system, was found to increase the risk of developing lung cancer and heart disease by up to 20%. The review also noted that a trial involving a folic acid supplement, which is thought to reduce precancerous polyps in the colon, actually increased the number of polyps in the colon. So let's chat about some of this, Ben. It's confusing.
It is confusing. I can see why it would be confusing to somebody who doesn't understand these things. See, this is what the medical paradigm is doing. They're taking these supplements, these nutrients. I don't want to call them supplements. I'm going to call them nutrients. And they're treating them like drugs because they only know about drugs. You have a disease, you take a drug. You have a problem, you take a drug. That's not how nutrients work, George. Nutrients are essential, like air is essential, like water is essential. If your body were a car, this would be gasoline. It's not like you have a disease that you take folic acid. It's like folic acid is responsible for how energy is produced in every one of the cells of your body. But the medical model wants to apply individual supplements to individual disease states and to individual toxicities because that's how they work with drugs. But these aren't drugs, and it's not fair to compare one to the other. And when I say not fair, I don't mean it's not fair like it hurts somebody's feelings. It's not fair because it's going to cause people to have an earlier demise and to suffer through it because they're not going to use these things. These supplements, what we call supplements, these nutrients, they should be in the foods. We should be able to get them from foods. In a perfect world, George,
you're supposed to,
right? We would have our soils, we would be rotating our crops, we would be letting our soils rest, we would be taking care of our water, we wouldn't be crapping in our water supply and in our air and everywhere else where we're spewing toxicity, we wouldn't be using GMOs. But you know what? We don't live in a perfect world. And even in a perfect world, there's going to be discrepancies to the, as it regards the amount of nutrients that are in the soil. Some soil is going to have more selenium. Some soil is going to have less selenium. So you're never going to have you're never going to know exactly what's in your food. And today, you can pretty much rest assured, you're not going to have anywhere near enough of the stuff you need. So this is an insurance policy. It's not like you take folic acid because you got polyps, and it's not like you take vitamin E because you got Alzheimer's disease. You don't take I call it this for that. It's not how you want to look at nutrition. You see what I'm saying? It's not this for that. It's like your body needs the mighty 90 essential nutrients, the whole package. Just like your car needs gasoline, except your body is so much more high-tech and exquisitely designed than an automobile that you need 90 different forms of gasoline.
Which you don't get in food.
You don't get them in food, and that's a problem. And even if in a perfect world, who has time to make sure that you have every single food done correctly and you're getting exactly the nutrients you need in the right balance in your foods and they're there after they're cooked and processed? This is an insurance policy. Nutritional supplementation, to me, is an insurance policy.
Now, would you give any credence at all to this study for anything?
Zippo. I mean, nada.
Nothing. Huh?
Not a word. I want to know what. There's eight different. First of all, remember, there's four nutrients that they looked at. They looked at beta-carotene, which is not even an essential nutrient.
Folic acid.
Right. They looked at vitamin E. There's eight different kinds of vitamin E. I want to know what kind of vitamin E they did the study on. All right. And the selenium, what kind of selenium was it?
And folic acid.
And then folic acid. I want to know about the folic acid. I want to know what else, George, I want to know what about the people who took these things. This was interviews. These were conclusions based on interviews with people. I want to know who those people were. I want to know what their education was like. I want to know what their health was like. Were they cigarette smokers? Did they have problems, adverse childhood experience issues which can affect health? There's so many variables here for the media to draw this incendiary headline based on a conclusion that nobody really can validate is so unfair. And by unfair, I mean unfair to human beings. Because at the end of the day, George, somebody's not going to take their supplements. Somebody's going to be deficient in nutrients. And we know good and well that when you're deficient in nutrients, disease states arise, and that's a fact. Deficiency disease, and that's one thing we learned in pharmacy school also, is that what we call chronic degenerative diseases, at their core, a cell is not getting the nutrients or the energy that it needs. That's what all disease is, really. It's at the cell level, which is another very important point. The cell is what it's about, not the molecule and not the tissue. See, there's three levels in the body. There's the tissue, and then there's the cell,
right,
and then there's the molecule.
Can you tell, Ben, if you're under-supplemented? I mean, when you spend your day at your office or wherever you might
be. Under-nutriated.
Yeah.
I can tell when I'm under-nutriated, and I know when I do some salt, for example. By the way, you know how they tell you not to stay off of salt?
Right.
Get yourself some good salt, quality salt, put it in water, stir it around, and drink it. And you know what, George? That first sip of salt water, just plain old salt water, is going to taste like the most delicious beverage you ever tasted. If you have adrenal fatigue, or if you're tired, or if you
You're not supposed to drink salt,
right?
At all,
you're not. That's brain dead. You know, you can test this yourself, George. Everything I'm saying is verifiable in your kitchen, and that's how it should be. You know, for example,
I mean, but if you're out to sea, you're not supposed to drink salt water.
No, that's
right?
Too concentrated.
Okay.
That's way too concentrated. Right. But if you have salt water, you get it to the point where you like the taste of it. The first sip of salt water is so delicious because we crave salt. And the more stress we're under, the more tired we are, the harder we're working, the more nutritionally deficient we are, the more burdened our body is with disease, guess what? The more salt you need.
Huh.
But not sodium chloride. That's what people think of.
That's what they think salt is.
Right. I'm talking salts. So you get a good salt, a quality salt. You know, if you go on the internet and look up salt, there's like 100 different kinds of salt. You know, gourmet salt, maybe more.
Right. What's this pink salt? What is that?
It's a Himalayan pink salt. It's found in the Himalayas. You know, salt is just minerals, George. That's all it is. Yeah, the word salary comes from salt. You probably know that. The word salary comes from salt because it used to be traded. Salt was such
a great commodity.
It was a commodity, right? There's a really cool book out called Salt that talks all about on the really neat things with salt. But the sodium chloride are just two elements. Salts are electrolytes. Magnesium is a salt, and calcium is a salt. Potassium is a salt, and you need them all. And by the way, everybody's dealing with adrenal fatigue. You know, who was it? Glenn Beck had.
Our buddy.
That? Adrenal fatigue. Guess what? The adrenal glands run on salt. One of the most important things you could ever do for your adrenal glands is make sure you have enough salt. Guaranteed he was on a low-salt diet.
Well, you're right. And again, people think of sodium chloride as salt. And that's dangerous. Ben?
Yes, sir.
With what is happening to the world health-wise today, what would you categorize that as?
It's a biblical. It's almost like to the point where we're going to evolve to get through. We're going to have to take a jump in evolution to figure out how to handle this toxicity. You know, it's a serious, serious, serious problem. When you combine nutritional deficiencies with toxicities, and by the way, you know, I believe this, I write about this all the time, it's spiritual, mental, emotional, and then physical. All right? And that needs to be recognized.
And not necessarily in that order either.
In that order. Spiritual, mental, emotional, physical. And the medical model doesn't, and how we look at the world, it marginalizes those other aspects, although less and less. Now there's peer-reviewed journals of psychoneuroimmunology where they relate the psyche to the nerves and to the immune system. And this is a very, very important point. And I love nutritional supplementation as a therapist. I've seen tremendous things happen with it with my own eyes, not interviewing people, but with my own eyes. I've seen tremendous things happen. But we have to be cognizant, and this is what you guys do, what Coast to Coast does so well, is you you deal with all of these aspects, the mind-body connection.
Sure.
You know, it's very, very important. And the medical model, the orthodox medical model is yet to recognize this, although at the fringes it is changing.
Is it changing in a drastic way?
No, it's not changing in a drastic way. It's, Thomas Kuhn wrote a book called The Structure of Scientific Revolutions in the 1960s, and he said, science progresses funeral by funeral.
We're with pharmacist Ben Fuchs from criticalhealthnews.com. How did you get started into all this? I mean,
when I was in pharmacy school, I had a very interesting opportunity. I got to work with a very famous skin care formulator, guy who invented Blistex, and I learned about the skin, and so I got really involved with formulations and skincare products. And when I graduated pharmacy school, I started to use nutrition to help people's skin, and because I knew how nutrients worked on the skin from studying the skin, and I noticed their blood pressure would drop, and they'd lose weight, and they would start to wean themselves off their medicine. It took me about 2 years of working in a pharmacy setting of dispensing suggesting nutritional supplements instead of dispensing drugs. Needless to say, my employer was not thrilled with me, and I didn't last very long. You know, I lasted a couple of years, but then I just started to do it myself in my own business, and then I started to talk about it. I think everybody needs to know this, George. Today is not the same today as it was 25 years ago.
And isn't there a difference between a good pharmacist, because you compound, you create.
I was compounding.
You create, than these people who merely will work at a big drugstore, and they count pills.
Count, pour, lick, and stick.
That's it.
That we call it a count, pour, lick, and stick. They, you know, it's going to be robots. Not very, in maybe 10 or 15 years, it's going to be robots doing it.
I bet, though, most kids who went to pharmacy school, colleges, and they're good schools all over the country, did not go to college to simply be a dispensary.
That's right. You hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of unhappy pharmacists. Now, I can't say what the situation is like now, although pharmacy is not a great profession, I know from talking to some of my friends. But when I graduated, pharmacists were very grumpy.
Really?
Yes, very grumpy, because you ended up working in a chain store. Let me tell you something. When you're working in a chain store, George, you're answering phones, and you're filling prescriptions, and you're running like a...
Oh, yeah, like for eight hours. I've seen these people.
It's awful. And if you ever see a pharmacist running around like a chicken with his head cut off, go to another pharmacy. All right, that's not a pharmacy you want to go to.
Do they make mistakes?
Oh my God, it's inevitable. You have to make mistakes. They hush it, and you know they get paid off really quickly for if it's a chain or if it's a big store. But yeah, you make mistakes. It's impossible not to.
Now, I mean, they could literally give somebody the wrong prescription.
Oh, bad! You put the wrong label on it. All kinds of stuff. The worst nightmare I had as a pharmacist was a patient who didn't read the label. I want that patient knowing everything about that medication.
How many pills to take, how
often. What it looks like, what it's supposed to look like, every detail, the possible side effects, you know, how many to take, when to take them. Medicine is serious, serious business. That's why when I watch these direct-to-consumer advertising, and it's a somewhat recent phenomenon, by the way, and they spend a lot of money doing it. You know, you ever notice there's always a cartoon with the drugs?
Yeah.
You know, there's always a little character with the drugs. So we get the idea that these are just kind of like Skittles, you know? We get they're branded the same way.
Pop.
And they're colorful, you know? Maybe they're Skittles, really, except for they'll kill you. So we lose the sense of the potency and of the real twisted nature of these things. These are perverted molecules. Yep. I always tell people drugs are nutrients are what drugs dream they could be.
Why are the drugs so expensive in this country?
Why is everything so expensive in this country? Do you know what the profit margin on these things are, George?
It's huge.
Ungodly.
Huge.
Ungodly. There is no more, I would venture to say, there is no more profit-intense business or product on the planet than pharmaceuticals. I'd have to be hard-pressed to think of it. You know, we're talking, for the ultimate medicine that you're getting in a bottle that goes for thousands of dollars, pennies, if that.
What markup?
Pennies to thousands, exactly.
Tell me about doctors, good ones, bad ones, with the way they prescribe.
I have a problem with doctoring because I believe in empowering the individual. Now, surgeons are different. Surgeons, you know, that's a skill set. neurosurgeons, cardiac, heart surgeons. I mean, this is an amazing skill set. But doctoring to me is problematic because what it postulates is that we cannot do our own business, and I don't believe that. I believe that the human body is a healing system, and I'm witness to that healing system every time I cut myself, I cut my finger. Not only that, the body is the home of an intelligence that we can't even begin to comprehend. And the nerve of a human being to come in and say, I know better, and your blood vessels are closing, but I'm going to force them to stay open, is very problematic to me. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The nerve of a human being to come in and interfere with what the body feels like it needs to do to survive or to get by or to do its business on some level is troubling to me. Now, doctoring, you know, if you go to the judge and you say, here's the evidence, judge, it's doctored, is that a good thing?
It's a bad thing.
That's a pretty bad thing, isn't it? If you go to the IRS and you say, here's my 1040, it's doctored. Is that a good thing?
I think they'll throw you out.
Pretty much, right? Because to doctor implies to jury rig. It implies to pretend that something's happening that's not really happening. So what doctoring to me is, it represents taking numbers and metrics and diagnostics and superimposing them upon life. You see what I'm saying? Superimposing numbers on top of reality because reality cannot be worked on. Remember I was saying that you have these three levels. You got the tissue, you got the cells, and you got the molecules. Doctors, the medical model cannot work at the level of the cell.
How do doctors stay on top of so many new prescription drugs that are coming out?
They listen to the salespeople. The salespeople come in.
That's what I thought.
You know?
I mean, I was watching Fox News tonight, and then I switched back between that and CNN. And they've got a lot of drug commercials on those shows. But every day there's a new one, Ben. So I'm wondering how these doctors keep on top of
all this. They're not new, though, George. They're not new. They're versions. They're derivatives.
Of another one.
Of another one. Exactly. They're me toos. There's nothing new under the sun. And there's nothing new under the sun in the world of medicine.
Now, the only way for a doctor to prescribe something new, then he's told about it.
That's another thing. They self-police. If there's a doctor that leaves the fray, you know, that wanders from the herd, he gets whipped back into shape or he leaves. And a lot of them do leave, George. This is not a rare thing.
In the old days, did doctors get rewards from pharmaceutical companies?
They put a little bit of a cut, you know, they kind of clamped down on that a little bit. But yeah, it was egregious. And the halcyon days of pharmacy were like the 50s and the 60s. That's when pharmacy was in its real glory days because it kind of peaked right around then. The 50s and the 60s, there were a lot of new classes of drugs that came out. And one of their big advances was mental health drugs, was in the 1950s. And of course, penicillin antibiotics were kicking in the 1950s. So the world of pharmacy was perceived as, and the world of medicine in general, was perceived as this super high-tech, miraculous, can-do-no-wrong, sort of like America was perceived. You know, interestingly, as America grew as a power, and got big as a power after World War II, that was the same time that the drug industry became very big. And there's a very interesting connection between World War II and the pharmaceutical industry. The pharmaceutical industry really began in Germany. The Germans were the first people to start working with chemistry, and they were the greatest chemists. And the Nazis in World War II, they were really fascinated with chemistry, especially brain chemistry. In fact, you probably know Hitler was on all kinds of a whole kind of pharmaceutical cocktail.
He sure was. Yeah.
You know, if you see the pictures of him in right before he died or a couple of years before he died, he's got the palsy, he's got the Parkinson's.
Could have contributed to his mental disease.
Yes, he was on speed. He was a speed freak. They didn't know what amphetamines, and the Nazis were too. The Nazis were the soldiers were given amphetamines, and they were working on mind drugs in the concentration camps, and a lot of these people came over in Operation Paperclip. A lot of the drug companies.
Oh, yeah.
Drug companies are old-time German pharmaceutical houses.
Bayer being one of them, right?
Bayer being one of them, absolutely.
Yeah, they had it all. Well, anyways, Ben, we're at the top of the hour. We're going to come back and take phone calls. Lots of folks are just interested in their own prescription drugs. Maybe you can help them, give them some advice. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.